in the Blue Rock collection. Emperor Tsukuso asks about the style of the pagoda. Main subject. Emperor Tsukuso asked Chu Kokushi, "When you are 100 years old, what shall I do for you?" Kokushi answered, "Make a seamless pagoda for this old monk." The emperor said, "I would like to ask you, what style should it be?" Kokushi remained silent for a while, and then he said, "Do you understand?" "No, I do not," said the emperor. "I have a disciple called Tengen," said Kokushi, "who has the Dharma seal transmitted by me. He is well versed in this matter. Please ask him." After Kokushi's death, the emperor sent for Tengen and asked him about it. Tengen said, "South of Sho and north of Tan, in between, gold abounds. The ferry boat under the shadowless tree, no holy one in the emerald palace you see." Secho's verse, "A seamless pagoda, it is difficult to describe. A dragon does not thrive in a placid lake. Tier after tier, superbly, it casts its shadow. Let it be admired for 1,000 ages." Today is the first day of our wonderful August Sesshin. I really love these August Sesshins. The katydids outside are just beautiful to listen to. I don't know when exactly they start, but they're not here in June. I noticed in June that they weren't here. And sometime in the middle of July, it seems, or early July, maybe late June, they start and they become more and more intense. Last night when we were going to bed, the sound of the katydids in the forest was just amazing. Just tireless roaring. You know, a number of years ago, we used to actually have such a small group that we had sesshin at my house. And at that time somebody came into Udoka-san and said, I'm just feel like I'm being driven out of my mind. And I said, "Why?" You know, he said, "The sound of those katydids, it's driving me crazy." I was stunned. I thought, "Really?" But I guess, you know, what one person considers beautiful, another person could consider really annoying. I was shocked. But I guess it's possible. Anything's possible. The Teisho today is based upon a conversation between the emperor and Chu Kokushi, national teacher Chu. And apparently the emperor has a great regard for Chu Kokushi. So he says, "Listen, when you get to your 100th year, when you get to be 100 years old, I'll do you a favor. I'll do something to commemorate your life in Zen. What would you like me to do?" And Kokushi said, "Please build a seamless pagoda. Build a seamless pagoda for me." So the emperor said, "Okay, fine, pagoda. I'm the emperor, I can do that. What style do you want? If you know anything about pagodas, there are many different styles. In China, there are pagodas that the roofs are square. There are pagodas that are round. There are pagodas that are octagonal. There are pagodas with, 20 roofs, 20 layers. You know, some have more layers, some have fewer layers. Some have very broad roofs that overhang. Some have very narrow roofs. All over China, you can see them. They're quite beautiful and dramatic, and in Japan also. So what style would you like me to build it in? Kokushi remained silent for a while. And then he said, "Do you understand?" "No, I do not," said the emperor. Kokushi says, "I have a disciple whose name is Tangen, and he's quite good at this, on this point. So you should talk to him sometime." And then after Kokushi's death, the emperor sent for Tangen. Maybe Kokushi didn't make it to be 100. The August Sesshin is really special. You know, sometimes it's been so hot, it's just been amazing. In fact, it's a subject of conversation. People who have gone to August Sesshin, when they think back on it, they think, "Oh my God, it was so hot." And I can remember sitting in the Zendo in many August Sesshins, just literally drenched in sweat. And I think other people can too, you know, because when they think back on it, it's with a mixture of awe and maybe a terror or something. People have, they say, "Oh my God, remember the last Sesshin? It's like 100 degrees out." They would just come in, sit down, sweat. You know, come in, sit down, sweat. And, I have to tell you the truth, it's the most wonderful thing in the world. It really is. You know, it's all how you approach it. You know, some people like to be cool and dry. But I guess most people do. That's why air conditioning is so popular. But the truth is that when you're not cool and you're not dry, it can be wonderful if you can get beyond your expectations. You know, Sesshin is really all about getting beyond our expectations. And it's difficult for us to do that, hence the need for Sesshin. Now, if you've, as I was saying last night, if you've come to Sesshin before and you've had some wonderful experiences, you know, one way to make sure that you don't have good experiences is to try to recapture what happened last time. And you're sure to be frustrated. You know, the truth is that I've had Sesshins that were just magical. I worked on the Mu Koan for about 5 years. So most people here who have been working on Mu made much better progress than I did, but I spent a long time on the Breath Perception Koan and a little less long on Mu. So I had been training for almost 10 years before I finished the Mu Koan. And I thought I would never finish the Mu Koan. And I just came to a Sesshin, I saw like another Sesshin, came to Sesshin. And we were building our temple up in the mountains. We had a mountain, we bought some property on a mountain next to a national park, national forest. And we named the mountain Reyunzan, Spirit Cloud Mountain. And we built our temple, Tokuganji, on the, it's a cold rock temple, on Reyunzan, Spirit Cloud Mountain. And we were working, it was what we call a Samu Sesshin, a work session, where we would spend a lot of time during the day actually doing carpentry, clearing brush, putting up a roof, hanging, putting windows into the building. It was really a miracle. Nobody got hurt. You know, we were getting up and doing zazen, but then we would have a long work period after lunch. And I was in charge of putting in the windows. And that was quite a time-consuming job, and I didn't really have time to be concerned about my practice. And it was quite a headache, you know, because they have to be level, and they have to be flush with the wall, you know, and they have to be shimmed properly. So when you put a window in a hole, you have a hole in the wall for the window has to be square. If it's not perfectly square, it won't close and open. It can't tilt out or lean in, you know, and so on. So you have to be very careful, and people who don't always know what they're doing can put it up wrong. So, you know, I was running around, making sure these windows went up. And of course, they were quite expensive, so if anybody dropped them, that would be a disaster. So I didn't really have time to worry about passing my koan anymore, and I had been worried about that for a long time. I just got up one morning, and we were having dokusan in the kitchen, just like here. We had a building that was our kitchen, separate from the zendo. And so we would run up this path, we had like a regular little forest path up to the kitchen, and we'd go in, and there was no door on the kitchen yet. So I just went in, and I called Mu for Genki Roshi. And I was so surprised. It was just like the most amazing thing. It was like, did I do that? Of course I didn't. But it was not anything I expected. You know, it was just like being swept away by Mu. It was like, you know, where did that come from? It was amazing. And totally unexpected. And it was really a wonderful moment, you know, because I just didn't expect anything to happen. And suddenly Genki Roshi said, well, you know, you've answered the Mu call. It was like, finally. But I didn't really think finally, I just didn't. It was just like, wow, what a day, what a great day. You know, and then the next session, I was given the koan on what does Shakyamuni ride. What does Shakyamuni ride? And I thought, well, now that I've spent 5 years on the Mu koan, I can probably zip through these other koans. So, what does Shakyamuni? I just sat on my cushion. What does Buddha ride? What does Buddha ride? What does Buddha ride? Buddha. And I couldn't. I'd go into Dokusan, and I was like, oh, damn, I'm right back where I was before. You know, I thought my days of being stuck were over after my wonderful Mu experience. And I had a miserable session. In fact, I was really sort of pissed off. I actually thought at the end of my session that, I don't know, this Zen is I'm not sure I'm into the Zen anymore. You know? I was very embittered by the session. And then I went back and practiced some more and realized that I was being kind of a big baby about it. And also, by then I really didn't want to stop doing Zen, even though I was not very successful at it, because I loved it, even though I wasn't very successful at it. So, you know, I stuck with it. But I ruined my session because I kept trying to have this wonderful experience all over again. And I kept envisioning myself going into the kitchen and sitting down in front of the Roshi and giving him this wonderful answer. And it was the same old story. Everybody went into Dokusan. Everybody stayed forever in Dokusan. I went in. I didn't have a clue. Right back into the same thing again. You know, I didn't know where I was or what I was doing. And of course, I still didn't like it. But you know, when I think back on those days, I realize that they were just wonderful days. You know, it was just wonderful to be alive. You know, it's like my little mind was so unhappy, But my big mind was so happy. The feeling, I had sort of a feeling all day that I didn't pay much attention to because my little mind was chattering on. But my big mind was so happy. And a little bit later, a couple sessions later, I suddenly realized that I was just very happy in spite of myself, you know. I was cleaning dishes. We didn't really have a fully operational kitchen yet. So we had a fire pit outside. And some of you, I think I've shown some of you pictures of Genki Roshi cooking over the fire pit. And we had like a little sink rigged up outside to do the dishes. It was like a wash tub, a metal tub on a platform. And that's where we did the dishes. And I was doing the dishes and I was just watching the wind in the trees and I just realized I was just so happy in spite of not answering my koan and many other problems in my life. That's a strange thing, but it's always the case, as a matter of fact. You know, it's like underneath our unhappiness, there's always this wonderful contentment. So, you know, we're here at Sesshin, and maybe you came thinking that you would answer your koan. And maybe you came thinking you're going to have another wonderful sesshin like the last one. And maybe you're coming for some kind of resolution to personal issues. Maybe you're hoping for Daikensho. And I hope you will give up on all of those aspirations at some point, either today or tomorrow. You know, sesshin has this beautiful quality, you know, so beautifully designed. And you come to sesshin expecting something really marvelous. Kensho, you know, what could be better than Kensho? You know, and by day one, by the end of day one, all you want to do is survive the next sit. You know, if you're here for the first time, this is going to happen to you, but please don't think that you're different from everybody else. Because believe it or not, if this is your first sesshin, you might be thinking, oh my God, and it's only the first day and I'm already tired. You know, already, my legs already hurt. I'm already feeling tired. And but don't be deceived. Probably everybody else in the room is feeling the same way. Number of people sometimes come to me before sesshin and express anxiety about it. They'll say, you know, I'm feeling more and more anxious about sesshin. And sometimes people even back out of sesshin because of that anxiety, which is such a shame. But you know, that anxiety is complicated. It's fear, yes, or something like fear. But you know, if you push it a little farther, if you sit with it a little longer, you realize it's not exactly fear. It's really not fear. It feels like fear, but it's something else. It's like, to tell you the truth, I think it's the thrill of being alive. You know, fear and the thrill of being alive look very similar at first, you know. But if you sit long enough, you begin to notice that, you know, it's not really fear, it's something else. It's like being alive. You know? Everybody has these kinds of experiences where we feel more richly alive. You know, I used to, before I did Zen, I used to get those kinds of experiences when I would go hiking. And I don't do much hiking anymore. But I used to be a really avid hiker. And if you do backpack, the way most people backpack, you get to see the most extraordinary things that nobody else can see because you get off the road and you might hike 50 miles, 100 miles into a wilderness. It's amazing. You know, mountaintops, rivers, waterfalls. You know, amazing. And there is, however, you know, a kind of a price to pay. Because if you're going to see the waterfall, often you have to hike a few days, and you know, you can only carry so much food. So generally speaking, a lot of hikers shoot for, say, 10 or 15 miles a day. And if you walk 10 or 15 miles a day with, say, 40 or 50 pounds on your back, you know, that's a common practice, you know. You stop for lunch and you take off your socks and you bandage your feet, you know, with blisters. And then you try to straighten up and your back is very sore. And, you know, you're covered with sweat. And then you look up and you see the mountains, or you hear the beautiful cicadas, beautiful katydids. Your body's hurting, but you feel so alive. You know, this is how people get hooked on hiking, you know. Because it hurts, it's tiring, it's exhausting, it's sweaty, but you get to feel so connected to life. You know, so connected to life. And I think Sesshin is like this. This is like a 50-mile hike, right? Like we're going to do about 10 miles a day. And little by little, everything's going to drop away. You know, you come to Sesshin, often you've got your expectations and your dreams about what's going to happen, and probably along with those you have concerns from your daily life, maybe. You're thinking about unresolved issues at home, or problems with your job, or the undefined future that has opened up in front of you. All of this seems terribly urgent, you know. And so it's a combination of this and that as you sit on the cushion. But then, you know, Sesshin begins to work its magic. Because, getting through this morning was probably hard work. Just getting through the last sit, probably an achievement, took a little effort. You know, by the end of the day, all of us will have sore legs and tired backs. All of us will be, pushing the envelope a little bit. And we'll all go to bed quickly tonight and probably sleep like a log, you know. Tomorrow we'll get up and do it again. But as this process goes on, you know, we become, I think, more and more natural. You know, more and more natural. Things matter less and less to us, you know. Troubling things matter less and less. And suddenly we can tap into this flow of life energy. See, it's a big mistake to think that there's less life energy in the heat than in the cold. You know, that surely can't be true. You know, heat and cold are all Buddha. You know, so when we sit in our sweat, you know, it's not what we expected, but it's utterly Buddha through and through. And it's totally glorious, you know. And if you want to think about it in a way that might make it easier for you to endure, think about it as purification. This is like purification. Every pore of your being is engaged in purification. And at some point you sit there and think, I hate it, 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 and then boom. It's like your heart opens up and it's full of life. It's like, oh, I love this life. I love this life. And it doesn't have to be sound of the katydids, it can be sound of traffic. You know, whatever bothers us can open doors to natural life. You know, deeper self, whatever you want to call it, this pulsing life. Many years ago, we had a sesshin in Seattle itself. And it was in a very busy part of town. so that the, you know, roar of traffic was always present, and the honking horns and so on. And this bothered me a great deal, I have to tell you, because I had the image of a sesshin as taking place in the rustic, rural hideaway. And actually, that's quite beautiful to practice there. But this was in a busy part of Seattle. And at some point, you know, I was just so annoyed by all the noise and interruptions. But I had a wonderful sesshin. At the end of it all, I felt so purified, because I just got too tired to make discriminating distinctions. You know, so this is a great opportunity. You know, this sesshin is just a wonderful thing, because you know, at some point we're going to get beyond our small selves, and you know, that usually involves some sense maybe of irritation or fatigue or loss. You know, sometimes you can, it's like you start out with a high ideal and then you realize it's not going to work, that things are not going to work out the way I thought. So maybe you're thinking, I'm coming to sesshin and I'm going to have kensho. And at some point you realize, I'm probably not going to have kensho. You know, maybe you begin to feel a little disappointed, a little, you know, like a little sense of loss or disappointment, you know. And that feeling is quite extraordinary. You know, it's really, again, it's like it feels like loss, or it feels like disappointment. But then if you sit with it for a while, you feel this pulsing sense of life, this great pulsing life. You know, even loss is a Buddha. And that's not a philosophical statement. It's an experiential statement. It's like if you sit down on the cushion and your heart is breaking because you've lost your job, or you failed your test, or your personal relationship is falling apart, or something like that, and you sit with that pain, little by little, you discover that the pain is just like the surface appearance. You know, it's like the surface appearance. And the pain, it transforms, or its real nature comes out if you just keep sitting with it. And its real nature is this pure, beautiful life energy. You know, same thing with fear. You know, I myself have always had a lot of problems with fear because of my particular upbringing. You know, I've mentioned that, you know, I spent some of my life in the town of Baltimore. I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of being in Baltimore, but it was, when I was living there, a very violent place. I lived near Lock Raven Boulevard, in pretty much of a tough neighborhood. And I would go to school and just hope I didn't have to fight on my way to school or on my way home. It was like school itself was safe but boring, and the transit between house and school, or our apartment and school, was dangerous. And there literally were people who would just beat you up to amuse themselves, or would shake you down and take your lunch money, this kind of stuff. This was quite common. And it was really, you know, a frightening place for a little kid, because, you know, these were all older kids who would sort of shove you around and shake you down. And I particularly was afraid of this guy named Bobby Westbrook. Bobby Westbrook. He was like my nemesis, or my nightmare. And he would beat me up all the time. And, Bobby Westbrook, Bobby. A few years ago, I came across a book by a scholar whose name is Robert Westbrook. And I looked at his picture on the back, I thought, could it be? You know, I wonder. You know, he's a political theorist of democracy. I don't know. It's the same guy. But I learned in that environment to be very fearful, You know, that was a bit, I created like this karmic structure. And then, you know, my father was a very aggressive guy who had a very sharp temper. And so I had to watch out for my dad. He was very violent as a person. So I developed this habit of fear, and fear becomes like your mode of being in the world, right? It becomes your habitual, it's like a default point, right? This is where you usually live. And so I usually live in fear, you know. And this was my like default point in life. This is sort of like my steady state, fear. And you know, when I was practicing Zen, always the fear was sort of like right around the corner. And I remember even when I was working with one of the last koans in my training. You know, I was working with a particular koan, and I said to my teacher, you know, I've been doing Zen for so many years, but I still see this fear in front of me. And he said, you know, that's your life koan. And so I spent more time, a couple of years, with fear. And at some point I realized that fear is this beautiful life energy. Fear is Buddha too. You know, superficially, it's fear. But if you go more deeply into it, it's this beautiful life energy. See, it's amazing, really. Pain is like this too, you know. Pain's the hardest one to deal with because, you know, that's really something nobody wants to be in. But even pain, if you sit with it long enough, transforms into Buddha. You know. So this kind of transformation is what we can have happen here at Sesshin if we put aside our expectations and we just follow the breath, follow Mu, follow our koan from moment to moment. You know, put aside all thoughts of enlightenment. Please put aside all thoughts of answering your koan or achieving anything whatsoever. You know, just be fully here now with your koan. And it will be wonderful. You know, it may not feel wonderful on day one, you know, or day two, but if you stay with it, you know, this transformation from pain to Buddha, from fear to Buddha, from anger to Buddha, from disappointment to Buddha, from broken heart to Buddha. This is guaranteed because everything is Buddha. And all of these forms of energy are just forms of energy, but fundamentally always the same energy, always the same, actually, benign, life-giving, radiant, kindly, indestructible energy. So, Emperor Shukuso asked Chu Kokushi, you know, you're a wonderful person and I'm glad you're around. When you're 100 years old, what would you like me to do for you? Kokushi said, make a seamless pagoda, perfect temple, a perfect temple. This is a very tough koan. You know, show me the perfect temple. See, and you show the perfect temple by moving beyond all of your limitations, right? So you call it fear, and then it turns into Buddha. You call it pain, and it turns into Buddha. You call it hatred, and it turns into Buddha. You know, you call it broken heart, and it turns. This is the perfect temple, see. We make our perfect temple breath by breath. One drop of sweat, another drop of sweat, you know. Mosquito bite, you know, if you just let the mosquito bite, you know, it's very interesting. It turns into Buddha. Really? I mean, really? You know, I'll never forget this, but during the same session when I was working on the Mu koan, You know, I was sitting listening to Genki Roshi give a teisho, and we didn't have all the windows in the zendo yet. We were putting the windows up, and so this bee—it was a wasp or something—came in and it flew over and it landed on my hand, and Genki Roshi looked up. And he could see it on my hand. And Webb was translating. And he looked and saw it on my hand. And I could, it was like a slow motion movie. I could see the bee's bottom go up in the air. And I could see the stinger. And then it just went right into my hand, right? And, you know, it was the strangest thing because I was waiting to go, ow, you know. But that's not what happened. You know, it was like, it was just my pulse rate picked up a little bit, and I just had this wonderful rush of energy. And I swear that, I mean, it's something I've never forgotten. You know, it was the most extraordinary thing. And of course, you know, Genki looked very, after it was over, Genki looked very calm, but Webb had this big smile on his face. So he must have seen what had happened. But this is possible, you know. Even the bugs biting you, it's not about being tough. You know, it's not about being a tough person, you know, toughing it out. This is not about being macho or strong. Zen practice is not about strength of will. Zen practice is about is about building the perfect temple. Yeah? So we just we can keep coming back to whatever is our obstacle. We keep coming back to our koan, and little by little this transformation occurs as we return to the source. If you return to the source, all these forms of energy become one beautiful form of energy, life, energy, Buddha, mind. So this is building the perfect temple. We've come here to build the perfect temple. We're going to do it breath by breath, drop of sweat by drop of sweat, bug bite by bug bite, and so on and so on. It's wonderful. The Emperor said, I should like to ask you, okay, I'll make a seamless pagoda for this old monk. See, seamless. No obstruction. No interruption. Always Buddha. Always Buddha. Kokushi remains silent for a while. That's the path. That's mushin. See, how do we do this? How do we make this transformation happen? Not through thought, not through will. Mushin, mushin. When you watch the breath, it takes you to a blank, dark space. Yes? When you call mu, you follow mu out and your mind becomes blank and dark. This is the gate. This is the gate of no barrier. This is the gate of the Buddha and the patriarchs. See, so Kokushi tries to show the emperor this gate. And so he's quiet for a while and then he says, do you understand? And the emperor says, no, I don't. So then he says, well, talk to Tangen, my disciple. And then Kokushi, a little later, Kokushi dies. So then the emperor sends for Tangen. And Tangen says, south of Sho and north of Tang, in other words, from the southernmost point to the northernmost point, and everywhere in between, gold abounds. Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. The ferry boat under the shadowless tree. No holy one in the Emerald Palace, you see. The true temple is the way to the true temple is through mushin. See, if you cling to the Emerald Palace, you never get to the true temple. The Emerald Palace is like what you want to have happen. What you expect to have happen, what you dream of happening. See, it's the repository of all your imagined goods and all your satisfied desires. Now, this is not the Seema's temple. This is like a prison house, actually. So we go through the door of Wu. This is our path. So every breath you take, you follow the breath out, Little by little, mind becomes blank and dark. You call Mu, little by little, mind becomes blank and dark. And then it may take day one, day two, day three, but at some point, you know, you're sitting there covered with sweat and you just feel, this is holy life. This is heaven itself. Yeah? So way to heaven is not to want to go to heaven, just be in the moment. Just be in the moment. So this is day one of our sesshin. We all got up this morning and we've been practicing with open hearts. Let's just go forward and whatever happens is 100% excellent. And whatever happens today, tomorrow, on and on, live or die, fail or succeed, these are all just words. Whatever happens is Buddha.